Everybody be cool, this is a robbery!
Any of you fucking pricks move! And I'll execute every motherfucking last one of you!
Oh, right. Of course, it's always about you, isn't it?
You think you can follow that act?
People of the Earth, this is Dave Sheridan, a.k.a. Special Ops Security, and you are listening to the Metal Hand of God podcast, M-Hall.
Don't worry if you don't make it out alive. We'll give you your money back. Guaranteed.
Welcome back to the Metal Hand of God podcast. I am your host, Wayne, and that fine gentleman with me tonight is...
Vernon.
That's right. Man, why do you take so long to know your name, man? It's like, pause,
man. I'm like, is it? Am I? I don't know. Is there someone else that's going to pop up surprisingly?
No. Why would it have a surprise?
Am I going to do something different? I'm like, no.
Well, we have an amazing guy joining us again.
Yes.
Return guest, Mr. Andre Gower. What's up, buddy?
What's up?
It's good to come back and be able to chat. How you guys doing?
Yeah, man. We're doing great.
Awesome.
Surviving just like yourself.
Mm-hmm.
Right. That's the we'll go with that.
Yeah.
Let's do that surviving thing.
Well, for the people out there who don't know, explain to the people what we're joking about, like messing around about, kind of poking fun.
Yeah. Well, the short story is, or the short version is, on July 3rd, which is now 4 weeks ago, which is crazy, but, July 3rd, I was playing tennis and with my buddy indoors and started to feel a little wonky. Long story short is by the time I felt that something wasn't quite right, I had a massive heart attack.
Jeez.
That's crazy.
And,
man.
We ended up getting out of where we were and got into my buddy's car. And we ended up going to a brand new kind of urgent care ER, which was, sort of like an ER in a box that was very close to where we were.
Okay.
So we weren't quite sure what we were dealing with at the moment.
Right.
And we got in there. I say that because the caveat is if remind me, make a note, somebody, we'll talk about do's and don'ts and things you should and shouldn't do. If something like this is going down, but we went to this place first, and it took them a minute or two to get the leads on me for to monitor just to see what's going on.
Yeah.
And the look on that doctor's face when he saw the monitor was I still remember it. He said basically with his face, "Oh shit," and he looked at me and said, "All right, you can't stay here. I've got to get you out of here. You are having a heart attack as we speak. And I've got to get you down the road to the big ER, to the big hospital."
Jeez.
And so they worked on me and for a few minutes started loading up some lines and loading up some meds, which I think in my situation certainly helped. Because I started getting those sooner than later. And then also they big hospitals that have that have a good ER and a good cardiac cath lab emergency team, they have protocols and procedures. And this urgent care doctor. You know, the ambulance was already on its way to get me, and they threw me in that. And as I was going, and honestly, the big hospital where I ended up at was really only about a mile and a half down the road.
Oh, thank God.
Which is another thing that was certainly in going on in my favor that morning. And you know, in the ambulance, and they called ahead. They had a, you know, their code is we have a STEMI coming in, and that was me. And it seemed like this ambulance driver, she was great. She was like, "We got to go. Let's go. We got to go." And because something was delaying, like they needed paperwork or something. I'm sitting there having a heart attack in an ambulance. And, like, the guy comes like, "You need to sign right here." I was like, "Really?" And
I gotta sign paperwork. Just, I can't stand up. What the fuck is wrong?
Like,
with you? I
don't. No, it was like an 8x10 glossy from Monster Squad.
It's like, "Hey man, I'm gonna miss you at the next con. Can you get you right here?"
Dude, that would be fucking.
Like, no, just come to the next con. I'm gonna make it. And I mean, she busted it down the road, and I swear, like, she power slid into that ambulance bay, and like I just popped out of the back. And because it was from that moment on, it was or from really, you know, when the doctor saw it at the first place, the pace was ramped up.
That's, yeah,
you know,
yeah,
the actions and the movement of people that were around me. And yeah, so got me into the big ER. The cath lab team was actually waiting for me there, waiting for the ER to do their thing, and they loaded me up with you know, more meds and more lines. I mean, I look like a power station with so many lines coming at me, I guess, or something. And Jesus. Then they, you know, I was racing down a hallway and into an elevator and into the cath lab within a few minutes, and that pace of that room was very quick as well. And I mean, I'm awake and I'm alert and I'm answering questions. I'm asking questions this whole time. Mm-hmm. And but I knew I wasn't in good shape just by what was, you know, going on. And I was super sweaty, so diaphoretic. I was just dumping sweat, and that was one of the first indicators. Like when I first started going down, and I was freezing, and I was a little compulsive, so I was shaking pretty bad on like my right leg and my side, just because my body was a little shocky. Mm-hmm. And they got me in the cath lab and started working. I was, you know, guys working in my groin area and inserting the two big shunts that the sheaths that go into your femoral vein and your femoral artery. And I'm talking to the nurse on my left and I'm talking to this guy on my right, and they're working at this pace. And then you can't really see anything after a minute because the x-ray cameras come down and they sit over your kind of whole body, like your chest. And so it's like right in front of your nose.
Right. Cause you have to monitor it the entire time.
Yeah. They do this like via live x-ray.
Yeah.
And, then the surgeon was in there and he's got the wires in there and he's got to go, you know, they got to inject the dye and find out where the problem is. Cause you don't know until you know. And, apparently what had happened is, my right coronary artery, you know, because you have a few main coronary arteries and then branches off that. But my right coronary artery, I had a rupture.
Oh, wow.
And when you have a rupture, you know, because apparently it was narrowed a little bit and that occlusion kind of ruptures. And your body responds to that by clotting.
Right.
And apparently that clot grew large enough to actually seal off that coronary artery. And it was at a very high point. It wasn't like at the end. It was like at a big main kind of branch area where, like, you know, it cut off the spigot of blood flow and oxygen to my heart muscle at kind of like an inopportune area.
Jesus.
And so they got in there, they found out where it was, and he's up there at the wires and ballooned the closure. And then when he ballooned, because I saw this video, like, immediately after, it was crazy. He showed me this whole thing. And the blood clot broke free and released and started traveling further away, which can lead to other problems. And so he had to go chase that and capture it and suck it out and grab it and get rid of it. And I remember after the fact when that happened, because the room tone changed. And it got a little more serious and kind of focused for a few minutes. And then, I'm still kind of laying there. I'm just kind of, and I'm there. Like, I can see, hear what's going on. And apparently they got the clot and then they got out and he had to, I have a stent. So they put a stent in that artery where the damage was. And then I didn't know this at the time, but after I went into VTAC, which is ventricular tachycardia, which is where your ventricles just start going.
Right.
And usually, you know, you get shocked out of that, but or you die. And I didn't have to get shocked. They did it with medicine. And so they fixed that with medicine. I remember this conversation happening and I was like, okay. So again, the room tone changed and got serious and focused again. And this is all happening like, you know, within 90 seconds of each kind of step. And I wasn't, you know, I really wasn't in there long by the time they did all this work, and which was a good thing. And so, you know, fix the VTAC, settle everything down, the stents in, the clots out, the arteries open, you know, there's blood flow going again, and it worked. And, you know, according to the surgeon and the staff and everything there, there was, I don't know how long I was blocked off at 100%, but it was way too long to be healthy.
Right. And,
you know, they said I had about, you know, I got into the cath lab and they got the work done and, you know, with about 10 minutes to spare.
Jeez. And, Christ,
so that's a little weird as you're awake and talking to people why all this is happening, and then to learn that later they actually don't tell you that, they tell
well her. No, they're not going to tell you those things because they don't want you to get more
that's
stressed,
right? So and it's always, you know, that's I guess it's a good thing they know what they're doing. You know, and then after the fact, you know, you see the video and you get told what happened and you're like, whoa. And yeah, so that was my Saturday of July the 3rd.
Dude. Well, let me tell you, man. I am very, very, very glad you're here. Not just to do the show, but because you're such a nice dude, and that's just, you know, the way it is. You're a cool guy. Oh. And yes. And you know, that's some scary, scary shit. Like, really, really is. And like I was telling you earlier, as soon as I saw that, and I was like, dude, this dude is like way healthier than me. And I need to go to the gym and I need to start eating right and go to the doctor. So I just want to let you know that I have starting to change everything because of this.
Well, that I'll take that. That's a good thing. And like you mentioned it, like I'm quote unquote healthier than you are.
Yeah.
I guess that's relative in some respects, but
you know, I mean,
probably am. And I live a rather clean, active, healthy lifestyle.
Right.
And you know, the weird thing of that, of, you know, why I want to, you know, since you mentioned that, it really is comparative or relative to what you're dealing with genetically.
Yeah.
You know, if you're predisposed to things, then you've got to be even more on the ball, so to speak, or way ahead of it. And, yeah, you know, kind of my just average, what I think is very average, kind of healthy, clean, you know, lifestyle is light years ahead of most people even that I hang out with.
Well, I'm
a little behind the eight ball on genetics on this particular type of thing. And, you know, that's probably what's kept me, you know, okay for a while, but you know, it'll apparently catches up with you. So I either there was nothing to do about it and it was going to happen, or, you know, I needed to be extremely diligent and way more proactive to avoid this. I just don't know.
Yeah.
I think the only thing that I lacked over the last couple of years was you know, getting super checked out with specific stuff and, you know, doing, you know, in-depth kind of you know,
testing and
medical
shit.
Checkups. And yeah. So, you know, if someone like you, you know, says, hey, you know, that's going to get me to go you know, at least just make an appointment with a doctor. That's a good step. And because a lot of people don't, especially dudes, like dudes just don't pay attention to that.
We put it off.
I've always been a doctor guy. I'm a dentist. I love going to the dentist. You know, I went to the dentist 2 days before my heart attack.
Nice.
So, and you know, it was, so that's kind of important, you know, especially for, you know, people and dudes our age. It certainly is. I mean, you know, we can't coast anymore. So you got to be a little bit more proactive.
Yeah. And I think I find that a lot of stuff with guys our age and stuff. And then I think the reason why we do a lot of stuff like this is not because we don't think it's important. It's because we're too busy taking care of everybody else and worrying about other things. That's my issue. I'm always worried about making sure my kid's okay, my wife's fine, make sure this is done, make sure that's done. And then I never take care of me. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. Like, I make sure everything else is well taken care of. And then I'm thinking to myself, well, fuck, what happens if I go? They're screwed. You know what I'm saying? Like, there's nobody there. So now when this happened to you, and then I'm thinking of all this other stuff, and I'm like, I got to get my shit together, man. Like really, I mean, I don't know what's going on inside of me, but I'm going to find out sooner or later.
Yeah. Well, good. I mean, that's great. You know, in general, you know, so now let's have more people do that.
Right.
Instead of having to go through something and then their life changes or something.
Right.
I happen to be kind of this, weird outlier. I don't say anomaly because, you know, I'm not different than anybody else in many respects, but it was certainly a surprise.
Right.
You know, I've been playing tennis for 45 minutes.
That's so crazy, dude. That's so crazy.
What's even crazier is a lot of people don't know, but I had, you know, I've been pretty active all year. You know, I get to hang with my buddy. You know, we hit golf balls in the range. We go play golf. We play tennis. We go for walks, you know, and work out in general. Could have probably done a little bit better. But the 60 days prior to my heart attack, I had actually been working out daily on a pretty disciplined and robust regimen.
Yeah, you were doing you were doing
and
something
the 30
online.
Days before that, I did like an Instagram kind of
activity
challenge with all my all my followers. Right. And you know, a handful of people jumped on. It was awesome because I needed them. It was a very selfish kind of thing, you know, to hashtag you like active with Andre for a month, because I needed them to keep me honest so I wouldn't slack off for this 30 day. And so I framed it as, hey, I'm doing something like this. You don't have to copy me. This isn't a fitness challenge or a weight loss challenge. It's just get up and move a little bit with me today.
Right.
But what I was doing behind the scenes, I was working out pretty hard, and I was swimming like 5 days a week. And I was lifting because I had an ulterior motive. The next week, it was supposed to be the Tuesday after my, the next Tuesday after my heart attack, I was supposed to fly to Texas to shoot a movie.
Oh, no shit.
Wow.
And so I was getting in shape so I could be, you know, look okay on camera.
Yeah,
and
so you can be...
You know, I wasn't doing anything drastic or, you know, diabolical. I was just, you know, getting, you know, shedding a little, you know, puff and getting a little build and so you could look good on camera. And I had just finished that, and I kind of like posted the final, hey, everybody, we did it. That was 30 days straight. That was awesome. Thanks for going along the ride with me. And I was getting ready that like a couple days later to actually say, hey, this was all for a reason. And I'm getting ready to go do a movie with my two filmmaker friends. And that was sort of going to be the payoff. The payoff ended up me making a video in an ICU bed saying I just had a massive heart attack.
Yeah. And when that video popped up, because I had just watched the last thing you did on your, you know, on Instagram with the getting fit thing. I'm like, oh, that's fucking cool, man. Because I think I'd missed when you had started it. So I was like trying to look at all the videos and catch up and see what you were doing. And then the following one was that. And I'm like, what the fuck just happened? Like, I was like, holy shit.
It was crazy. And like, you know, on Instagram, if you hit whatever the button is and you see just like the small thumbnails of all of your posts, like the post of The hospital, and the one right before that was, hey, everybody, we just finished 30 days of awesomeness. Right. Like, activity.
Yeah.
And like, this couldn't be a bigger contrast.
And this is the payoff in the hospital. I'm like, what the fuck?
Right. That's why everybody's like, I'm never working out with you again.
Forget that. He pushes too hard.
Yeah, I was kind of taking it easy, which is really funny. I wasn't overdoing it. I was, you know, my cardio was actually swimming. Which is super low impact,
right? That's not really that bad. Yeah,
yeah, and I enjoyed it, and I was looking okay. Ironically, I wasn't looking as good as I wanted to and should, and I realized that one thing. So this is something that, you know, anybody that's listening or involved, I had. You know, all year long, I had sort of had this kind of fluid retention. And it was just a little bit like, right, you know, around in front of and around my belly button, and then a little on my sides. And then I've always had a little, you know, fluid issue depending on, like, you know, like if I drink like two beers, I like puff up because beer just like makes me puff up because I don't drink it that much. But in my face, I had a little bit of puffiness. But I realized this wasn't like weight gain or like fat gain. It wasn't like adipose tissue just sitting on my waistline.
No, it was the fluid backing up from your heart.
It ended up being fluid because it would change daily. And I realized, like, why does all this fluid build up? And so I was trying to, you know, get rid of that and flush it out, and, you know, just, you know, maybe this, you know, 2 months and activity challenge would kind of flush all that out. And what, and maybe, you know, this isn't, you know, definitive or clinical, but, ironically, as soon as I got, you know, had my heart attack and I got fixed up or saved and spent 3 days in the ICU, when I finally came home, I realized, like, all that fluid's gone.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And now, granted, you know, most of it was because I hadn't eaten anything in 2.5 days at all. But like the fluid in my face and everything, it's still gone. And, you know, it could have been a thing. That you know, was related, because not only did I have the right coronary artery critical incident, which was, you know, it was being, you know, I don't know how narrowed it was when it ruptured. Most ruptures, according to the, you know, the cardiologist, is about in between 50% and 60%. But you know, it could happen anytime. So I don't know what that one was. But while they were in there, I also have in my LAD, which is your another main coronary artery, your lower anterior descending, or left anterior descending artery, which they call the widowmaker.
Yes.
That's the widowmaker. I'm 50% narrowed on that. So that's, you know, I could have had two of my artery at 50% and then one of them blew out.
Right.
So that, you know, that's another thing. You know, it's not just don't wait for an incident, go get checked, because you can mitigate.
Oh, you can have multiple blockages and you not know about it. Yeah,
that's right. Until it's too late. And I didn't know I had any, you know, until it was almost too late. So now I have to deal with that one.
Yay.
We're trying to treat that one medically.
Yeah.
And kind of leave it where it is, or maybe improve it. But probably in, I don't know. You know, it depends on the growth of that occlusion on that one. If it gets worse and worse over time, they'll have to go in and put a stent in that one as well.
Yeah. Well, at least you have the option. I mean, just think of the other option would have been you not here. So,
well, yeah, the other option is you calling somebody else
to chat on the podcast. I'm like, hey,
I am unavailable. You know, yeah, I'll it's certainly not something, you know, I'm really trying to, you know, there's a lot to deal with. There's a lot of physical stuff that changes, you know, just because your body's whacked out for a while. I feel pretty good physically now. There are things and images and conversations you have with yourself, which affect you mentally and emotionally.
Well, yeah, I'm sure.
You know, you're like, whoa, and then holy crap, and then okay, let's go do this now. And then kind of the major thing that I'm, you know, in the front of my mind now is I'm annoyed that I'm like that guy now.
You're that guy.
You know. Because, yeah, I'm that guy with a stent and a cardiologist. And now when I go to, like, the dentist or any other medical office or whatever, and you fill out all those forms, it's always just a no. I have no problems. I don't have any issues.
Not anymore.
I don't do it. And now it's like, oh, I get to check a giant box.
Yeah, and then you have to go through it. And
I'm on meds.
Yeah, and you got to do all your meds. I don't like taking medication. Ugh. You got to do all your meds and all that stuff. Whatever. Yeah. I don't know what you're on, but it's probably like Lasix to keep the fluids down and other things, other heart medications.
Luckily, I got out with not a lot.
That's good. That's good.
One of the things, when we were done in the cath lab and, it was crazy because we're in that cath lab and while, they're like, okay, we're waiting for your ICU room to, to be assigned and then we'll take you down there. I was like, okay. And then over the overhead, like the PA in the wing or in the ward, you're like, you hear the STEMI code. So someone else is downstairs with a STEMI.
Yeah.
Like I just went through and they're going downhill. And they're like, and we've got someone else that needs to come up here, so we got to wait for your room. But you can't leave the cath lab until you have an ICU room assigned.
Right.
And I'm like, not at the expense of this person that's in the elevator. Like, I was like, put me in the hallway. I was like, get me in the hallway and let this other person in there. Like, no, we can't. You got to wait. I was like, put me in the hallway and get this other person in here. Like,
yeah, come on, man.
I don't. And they were like, well, we can't do that. Eventually, they ended up doing that, which was totally fine. It was weird because I had just gone through this whole just crazy experience, and I was like, put me in the hallway for a few minutes. Fine.
Just stash me in the closet.
Your body's all whacked out. But, one of the point I bring that up is because for about a day and a day and a half, where I actually had that blockage is on the right side of my heart, on the right side of our hearts is where your SA node is, which is your sinoatrial node. And it's a bundle of fibers which receive the initial electrical signal from your brain to beat. So your heartbeat starts in this little bundle on your right side, and then it goes across your heart. And that's why kind of your heartbeat is really like a electrical wavelength that goes from the, right into the rest of the heart and in a certain sequence to make it work. I had no blood flow or oxygen supply to the right side of my heart for a long time.
Oh.
And so we were unknown how much damage that and heart muscle tissue had been damaged or either died. And if that SA node gets messed up, you could be on a permanent pacemaker.
Yeah.
And that was, we didn't know for about a day and a half, where the damage was, how much, if it was the SA node or anything like that, I believe. So I got lucky with that. So that was a really good thing because I stared at the ceiling because it's the only thing you can look at when you're just kind of pinned in this ICU bed because you can't move your right leg because you got these lines in it and it's uncomfortable. And I just said, I'm not leaving here with a pacemaker. This is not happening. So just concentrate and like breathe deep and like get that heart muscle back. And, luckily no pacemaker, cause there'd been 10 other meds that you'd have to take forever.
Right.
I got lucky with, right now I'm on a low dose aspirin, a statin and, an antiplatelet med called Brilinta. Which works with the aspirin to prevent your platelets from sticking to the stent.
Nice. So, you know what, man? You really did do pretty well considering.
Considering the five or six other – there could have been a lot of other – there's one major way that this could have ended up.
Yeah.
Which is just not the good one. But if you're going to come out of it, I think I came out of it as optimal as possible.
Yeah, I was going to say it's really well because, have that minimal amount of medication you have to take and you not have to have a pacemaker and, or half of your body paralyzed or, any of that stuff.
For a number of days, there was a lot of things that we just didn't know.
Right.
That could have really affected the outcome. And by no means is anything fine and over and 100%.
No, yeah.
But, I'm fortunate. I've still got to work on stuff and recover and get better and get that heart muscle, repaired, and hopefully not get have these platelets stick to that stent and take you out in its own clot.
Yeah.
And on that drug, if people are on it, or don't know about it, it's, you got to be careful. Like if you get cut or
You'll bleed.
You get bruised. You know, it'll take a long time for it to stop.
Yeah.
So I'm dealing with that right now, and trying not to bump into things.
Man.
But, you know, so these are the things that now, like I said, you know, I'm annoyed that I'm that guy. I have to add a whole other thing to my world, and I was trying to add all this other cool shit to my world, not this.
Well, to be honest, you at least you can add it to your world.
And that's the best way to look at it.
You know what I mean? Like, I get it. It's a pain in the ass. Look, trust me. When I went in and I had to be put on some cholesterol meds because I was like borderline, you know, cholesterol problem. And right. And the doctor's like, well, you might want to be put on this. I said, man, I don't want another. You know, I don't want to be put on this medication, man. Fuck. He goes, well, look, let's put you on it. And if you can get your diet, you know, back to whatever. You probably don't need it later. I said, awesome, you know, and it's been a few months, you know, but I'm like you. I was like, man, I gotta fucking tell people. I can't even pronounce this drug, you know. It's like, come on, man. I work in the medical field, and you send me this damn thing that looks like y'all just threw a bunch of alphabets together. You know, it's crazy.
Exactly.
But
like you said, I mean, there's definitely a. If you just go with the alternative, you know, you're like, okay, yes. If I had to choose, I'll take this.
Well, you know, to bring us on a lighter note, yesterday I saw you do a post on Instagram, I believe it was yesterday, of a stack of movies.
Ah, yeah.
Did you watch any of those yet?
I've seen a couple of them. If I remember, I love one of them. It was one of my favorite movies of the year. The Autopsy of Jane Doe.
I have not seen that yet, but I did.
Oh, that's really cleverly done.
But I did get to play with the Jane Doe autopsy body. It was at Texas Frightmare a few years back. And it was actually
I know that prop. I have a photo with it myself.
Yeah. So they had it laid out on the table, man. And and they actually were giving it away. It was auctioning it off. And because all the proceeds went to suicide prevention stuff.
Oh, awesome.
So they had it there, and I was like, I have to take a picture with this thing. So, of course.
I did, too. I saw it at Fantastic Fest.
Nice.
At the Alamo Draft House in Austin.
Nice.
I took a cool photo. I think I'm with my buddy Paul Salfin, who lives in Dallas, in this photo. It's a really cool photo. But, yeah, the folks at Raven Banner Entertainment, which is, you know, the studio and Canadian or distributor, sales agency and distributor out of Canada.
Yeah,
sent me a box of cool movies to watch, and dude. I've seen a few of them, but you know there's some that I haven't, so I get to pop those in and enjoy them while I'm, you know, recovery. Being less active than I want to be.
Well, I tell you what, man, when I saw that you had Turbo Kid on there, I don't know if you've seen that movie.
I have seen Turbo Kid. I saw it a long time ago when it was festivaling.
Yes.
Because the trio of filmmakers that made that movie were all pals.
Oh, no shit, dude.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, so RKSS, those folks, you know, they're French Canadians and they are awesome.
That movie is amazing, dude.
We've been all over the place with them because we festivaled kind of at the same time. And you know, with the documentary Wolfman's Got Nards. And so what's interesting about RKSS, which is Turbo Kid, they were festivaling their next film, which was the summer of 84. Oh. And the summer of 84 is very, very Monster Squad.
Really? I haven't seen that. I haven't seen that.
And it's very cool. It's about a group of kids in a neighborhood who think that there's a killer that lives next door. And maybe there is and maybe there isn't.
Fucking
so,
scary,
you know, they got a band together and get on their bikes and figure it out. And I thought that movie was really fun. There's some super clever bits in it. There is definitely a Rudy character.
Nice.
That is just a direct homage to Ryan Lambert's Rudy. And but so, you know, so we know all of them and we kind of traveled around with them for, you know, 6 months or so, and you know, because you go to the same festivals,
right? Yeah,
and the same parties and the same stuff, and they're awesome. And that's I can't, great. You know, I can't wait for their next stuff. And you know, I haven't seen them in a while because we haven't seen anybody in a long time.
Well, right? Yeah. And it looks like
back out there and hang out. So yeah, there's Turbo Kid in there in this list. There's Spare Parts. There's Victor Crowley, which is Adam Green's movie.
Victor Crowley's awesome. That's a great film.
And Adam's a friend of mine.
Oh, really? That's very cool. Yeah,
you know, I get to hang out at Aeriscope. It wasn't close. It wasn't far from where I, you know, stay in L.A.
Well, they filmed that here in New Orleans, I believe. Yeah. Victor Crowley was filmed here. Yeah.
Yeah. And Adam's awesome because, you know, he's just a cool dude. And he's got a cool little kind of office set up. And, you know, I've been on Movie Crypt with him and Joe Lynch a few times. And Adam gives a fantastic. He's one of our first. He's one of our first sit down in LA interviews for Wolfman's Got Nards.
Oh, that's cool.
And get some really cool, you know, stories and kind of, you know, kind of background. And it's a good setup. And then we did Joe Lynch, you know, we did it in the same spot, you know, a few days later. And because those guys are so cool, I've known them for a while and they have great Monster Squad stories.
Yeah.
And so they were perfect for the documentary. And, you know, so and then. You know, what's interesting with Raven Banner is Raven Banner is our international sales agent for Wolfman's Got Nards. And so right now,
that's cool.
They are out doing deals in different markets to get Wolfman out internationally.
Dude, that's really cool.
Nice.
Yeah, it's we're a little long in the game on getting the fucking movie out. But
you got to do what you got to do.
One or two different reasons for that were not any fault of our own, really. I'm not gonna put blame on, you know, other things or other people. It's just the way you know, things worked out. We got delayed and kind of got hosed in one manner that delayed us like an extra year. Right. And then COVID hit.
Right.
But you know, which didn't help. But yeah, I got this great stack of movies from the folks at Raven Banner.
I was awesome. Envious, man. I was like, man, there's some in there. I was like, man, like Spare Parts, I don't think I've ever seen that.
I haven't seen Spare Parts either, so I'll pop that in and watch it.
That looks good. Victor Crowley's great. I like I said, we had Dave Sheridan on recently, Doofy from Scary Movie, and he was actually in Victor Crowley. He was the everybody says he said everybody always tells him I didn't know you were in that movie. He goes, I was the guy who killed him. I was the hero of the movie. How do you not know I'm in the movie? It was so fucking funny, man.
And that's either fun or gotta suck. But at least I'm not in Victor Crowley. I can't even say, like, Adam didn't call me. I'm like, what's up, man? You'd go in to make this movie and you don't tell anybody, then you drop it. And he's like, why didn't you call me?
It's like, what the hell, dude? Damn. Yeah. But no, that's a good film. I mean, I was a big fan of the Hatchet series, you know, and especially that it was like a thing done here, you know, and like in the area of Louisiana, and it was actually done here, and it wasn't done somewhere else, and they put these horrible Louisiana accents and everything.
Right.
Because we're not all swamp people.
The other way around. They either shoot it somewhere else and like, we're in Orleans.
Yeah, exactly.
You're in L.A.
Exactly.
You're in New Orleans.
Or the opposite. You know, they shoot it in New Orleans and they go, we're in New York City.
Like, yeah, that too. That too. Yeah, it's crazy.
You're down by the West and I know right where you are.
One of my favorite, my favorite thing about some of these films is when they cut things. Like, okay, so like, you see a scene, you'll see a scene in like the French Quarter, right? And like, we all know exactly where the French Quarter is. And they're like, okay, well, look, we're going to go right around. He's right around this corner. And of course, they using like the swamp people accent.
That's a mile away.
Right.
Sure.
They say it's right around the corner. And when they turn the corner, it's a swamp. And I'm going, there is no fucking swamp in the middle of the city.
Right.
I remember the first time I saw something like that, like it was like, I think the Pelican Brief, like the early 90s. And it was like,
those movies were terrible.
And I remember this like 25 years later, like Julia Roberts is like in some place on Bourbon Street. She comes out, goes around the corner of the building and is in Kagan's, this like dive bar on Decatur Street, like, you know, almost a mile away. I was like,
That's nuts. I don't believe Hollywood's been lying to me all this time.
They're liars. It's not real.
Yeah.
Well, I realized that when I grew up watching The Dukes of Hazzard, and that was shot, you know, north of L.A.
Right.
Not far from where I grew up, and it's all like scrub oak trees and sagebrush. And right. I'm like, are those the mountains of Georgia? I was like, those aren't the mountains of Georgia. And
it's just funny. Like,
this is crazy.
Dude, and Star Trek was filmed on Earth. Like,
what the fuck? No way.
Yeah.
Yeah, they totally ripped us off there.
Those fucking bastards.
But I think Tom Cruise is fixing that.
Like, yeah.
He's actually going to shoot a movie in fucking space.
Is Elon Musk helping him? Please tell me he is.
He better.
L. Ron Hubbard. Yeah.
You can say what you want about both those people with, you know, what you do or don't like, but you can't not understand that those two individuals have actually made an impact on
I can tell you right.
And our countries.
Dude, I can tell you right now, I love both those guys, because without their batshit crazy ideas, we wouldn't be halfway, you know, doing certain things. Like, dude, Tom Cruise hung off of a fucking 100-story-foot building. You know, I'm like, yeah,
he's crazy.
You're insane.
You know, he gets to act the way he wants or thinks the way he wants because he puts his money where his mouth is. Like, he doesn't even do that. He just goes and does stuff and says, oh, yeah, I did that.
Well, it was Nicole Kidman for a while.
Or he lets other people say, you realize he actually did that. That's what's cooler about Tom Cruise. He's like,
right,
I'm going to do a skydiving scene. And we could totally do this on a sound stage. But why would I do that? I'm Tom Cruise.
Yeah, he's like, do you know who I am? I jumped on Oprah's couch. I can jump out of an airplane. Don't fuck with me.
And that's what people only remember. They remember Tom Cruise being crazy on Oprah's couch and not realizing that, you know, as a 55-year-old, he jumped out of an airplane 100 times to do one scene.
And he hung off of an airplane, for crying out loud.
That was crazy. Yes,
like he literally
actually flies the airplanes in Top Gun Maverick. Like, yes, I can't wait to see that because I'm a huge Top Gun.
I have not seen that. I want to see this movie so bad.
Is it out yet?
No.
It's the only movie that I actually got mad that COVID kind of postponed. Right. It's the only one I was mad at because, you know, I go to the movies. You know, I see a lot of movies, and I see a lot of movies at, like, festivals or screenings, and it's very rarely that I go to the movies, like, on my own.
Right.
Like, I'm like, I'm going to go to the Cineplex and watch a movie. It's like, I get to see a lot of cool movies in different spaces, so I don't necessarily have to go to the mall to see the movie.
Right.
But every once in a while, there's a movie. I'm like, that's happening.
Yeah, you got to go do it, right?
I'm going, and I'll usually go by myself. It's like, I'm going to see Top Gun. No one's going with me.
Oh, yeah.
And I would go, like, on a Wednesday morning on the first show, so I'm like the only one in the theater. Yep.
Yeah. And you're not disturbed by anybody screaming or whatever.
That's right. And that got that got postponed for a little bit. So you know, we'll have to wait till it finally comes out.
Yeah.
But
and I can't, I
we look. Got, we got talking about Tom Cruise. How did that happen?
I don't know, dude. We ended up
we went from Victor Crowley to Tom Cruise.
Yeah,
it's pretty good. Range.
I can say this. I a lot of people badmouth the dude, but I can tell you what, everyone who badmouths Tom Cruise has at least one of his movies in their favorite movies. Always.
Oh, yeah.
Doesn't matter.
Yes. And, absolutely.
And I'm like, well, you just said he was a, yeah, he might be a little off, you know, but he's a great actor. He does good at what he does, and I enjoy all his films, most of them.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, nowadays, I think being a perfectionist is a bad word, apparently. But he, you know, demands hard work. He demands precision. He demands getting it right. He doesn't phone it in. And a lot of actors, when they reach a certain stage, they just phone it in.
Right.
And, you know, if you've had the career and you do it, like, okay, fine, phone it in. Like, you just relax a little bit. He's never going to relax.
No.
Right. And, And that's okay. Like, you know, he's like, oh, he's an asshole. He yells at his crew. I was like, he totally can.
Yeah, it's Tom fucking Cruise.
He's not doing that from the trailer. He's out in front doing all of this. He's not asking you to do anything that he's not doing himself.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, plus, he yelled at his crew because, you know, they were violating things for a global pandemic.
Right.
Like,
right.
Yeah, good. dude, he's doing what I want to do to everyone that I see.
Exactly. You know? Like, exactly.
Half the times when I go to the grocery store and it's like, pull it up off your fucking chin.
Yeah. Your nose is part of the whole thing.
Right. In fact, it's important part. Yeah, I would love to bring him with me every time I go to the grocery store.
I think everybody wanted to.
A mini Tom Cruise. You pull out every time somebody's not wearing their mask. What the fuck are you doing?
So you mean a Tom Cruise then?
Yeah. Sorry. Yeah.
Me too. I mean, I love the fact that I don't care, you know, who they put him with or what camera angles. I need those too. I need those same angles.
Yeah.
And I think with Cruise, and then by all means we can change topics, but I think he is our only current and possibly our last movie star.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Everybody else is either a great face or a good actor or a name, but they do not have the impact all around.
Yeah, they don't have that
Tom Cruise has on a movie title.
I agree, because you look at most films, and it's usually, like nowadays, they don't put the actor's name above it. I haven't, you know what I'm saying? Like,
normally,
Yeah, I normally see it's like The Rock or starring so-and-so. You know, I'm just using that as a film, just staring at it right here. But, you know, it's like it'll be Tom Cruise Mission Impossible. You know what I'm saying? Like, he's the he's the header.
It goes above the title or before the title, because he's not just the lead actor in it. He's the reason this whole movie is happening.
Right.
Not just the actors, not just maybe, you know, even if you directed it or like he's the reason it got done.
Normally if you see it, it's normally a director that's above it, you know, like George Romero's Day of the Dead, you know, some Dawn of the Dead or something like that, you know, which is a fantastic movie, by the way. Speaking of which, what have you watched lately? Being that you can't really do much, I know we've talked before about like you're a big, you know, TV watcher and things like that. So I want to know what you've been watching, man.
It's been bad because luckily I got this stack of movies to watch. And this last week, like this last week and a half, I guess we're already Monday, so it's like last week, I've been much more active. So I've been out. And I don't like sitting around the house. Right. Look, there are certainly days that my entire life, like, this is a house day. I'm just sitting here, and I'm not getting off this couch. But right now, that I can't stand that.
Well, yeah.
I rest a lot, and I'm like, I got to get out. So at least, you know, go out for lunch or go for my walk or go hang out with my buddy. And a lot of people are like, you can't go anywhere without your buddy Mike. Like, because he's the guy that was.
Yeah, no shit. I was going to say that.
Yeah.
That,
you know, got me where I needed to be. And that was another thing. You know, I've mentioned, you know, four or five things that were in my favor that day. And being with Mike was definitely one of them. And my buddy Mike is like everybody's favorite person now.
Right. everybody like, messages, okay,
take
you.
Take it easy. Give Mike a hug for me. I'm like, you don't even know Mike. So I've been active. You know, I try to get my steps in. I try to walk about a mile and a half a day or 2 miles if I can. And, you know, for the first week, which was week two that I was walking, I would just go out front and I'd go about three houses to the left and then turn around and go three houses to the right and then turn around and go three houses to the left not get too far away from the house. Just cause you know, you're getting your kind of confidence back and you're just kind of unsure.
It's freaking scary. Yeah.
And but now I go around the block or I'll go someplace and like we can walk around a little retail area for a little bit and it feels a little better. But I don't push it. You asked me what I've been watching, and you know, luckily I got this the stack of movies, so it'll give me the excuse to actually watch something. I've barely watched anything except for something that I've already seen.
Right.
And I've watched a ton of I've been sleeping great, which is awesome. And that may have been a sign too. So if you're not sleeping well and you're just not getting that deep, deep sleep in the morning, like when you should be in like super, super REM sleep and having these deep dreams, you're not getting good enough rest. You may be sleeping for the hours that you think you are, but you're not getting good rest. And I've been getting really good rest, but then you wake up at 4 a.m. and, you know, your brain clicks on or something, and then, like, you can't go back to sleep. And so the TV, you know, gets clicked on. And, man, I have watched a ton of Law and Order.
Nice.
And, you know, even old, like, OG Law and Order. And
right. Jerry Orbach.
Jerry Orbach and Benjamin Bratt, and, you know, original was like Benjamin Bratt and George D'Zunza.
Oh, right.
And then Orbach and Jesse Martin, who I really like, you know, was in that role, and you know, Sam Waterston and all that. It's fantastic.
Right.
It was kind of boring and groundbreaking at the same time, but now it's neat to watch because you see all these amazing guest stars that really, right. Yeah, oh, right. My God. this
Stephen Colbert,
like,
was a pedophile. Yeah.
That's right. And a ton of people that I know, some people that I don't know.
Oh, cool.
I love when people repeat as different characters as guest stars, because there's only so many actors in New York. You know? But a lot of OG Law & Order, a lot of Law & Order Criminal Intent, which is actually a great show. Yeah. And my favorite in the series is SVU.
Oh, yeah, Law & Order Rape. That's the best one.
And,
Law & Order Rape.
Yeah, and just because there's this awesome kind of there's no personal connection to that show. Yeah, yet there is. Like, I say there is, because when I was a kid, I was 16, I think, 16-ish. And when I was a teenager, like 14, 15, 16, there was a group out of L.A. run by a guy named David Mirisch. And then his son, Michael Mirisch, ran it for years. But he was the guy that would – there's a long story, but there's a payoff, so bear with me.
Take your time.
That would do all these kind of charity fundraising sporting events that had celebrities in them. So, like, if your school needed a fundraiser, or, like, you know, some big charity was doing a golf tournament or something, like, he was the guy that was the coordinator of these events that would bring in the celebrities.
Okay.
And they were all sport event oriented. So a lot of tennis tournaments, a lot of golf tournaments, softball games. And there's a thing called the Hollywood Knights with a K, celebrity basketball team, which they've ran for like 40 years. And I played on that for years and years and years. And there was a trip that was actually, I remember it so fondly, because it was in Houston in August, I think, and which is the hottest,
good times
place I'd ever been in my life. But it was in the wood. It was at the Woodlands, you know, resort area, which is amazing. And it was a dual thing. It was like 40. It was like a golf tournament and this tennis tournament. And I was a good tennis, you know, still am, except for when I have a heart attack. But you know, I'm a decent tennis player, and I was an okay golfer back then. Now I'm a much better golfer because I've been playing more, you know, for the years. And this was the first trip I went on without one of my parents. That it was actually a traveling trip.
All right.
And yes, had no idea, you know, like what that meant. But it was an awesome thing. And anyway, the point of the story is a friend of ours that had been part of, you know, the celebrity group for years was a guy named Richard Steinmetz. And, you know, no one would really know him or recognize him because he wasn't really like on a series regular or, you know, movies. But he was a character actor and super nice guy. And he brought this girl that he had been kind of like seeing. And I was like, who is this? Like, we're in the airport. Like, we meet at LAX, like, on the way, because we're going as a group. And she and I just kind of, like, hung out. We talked. I was like, you are, like, super cute. And, like, you're dating my friend. And he's older than you, but you're older than me. So it's like, you're in that. I'm like, oh, this is weird. And but I'm, like, 16. I, you know, there's no shot here. She's, like, you know, 22 or something.
Right.
And just had this, you know, she's just super good looking and really fun. And we hung out all weekend and became pals. And it's funny because we had these inside jokes that, you know, we still remember and that we just created over this like 4-day weekend in Houston.
Nice.
And it was Mariska Hargitay.
Oh, no shit.
This was way before, you know, she really even kind of started working. But what was rad is, like, Richard would be like, you know who her mom is? I was like, I have no idea who her mom is. And this was back in the day. He was like, her mom is Jane Mansfield.
Jesus.
And I was like, holy crap, this is amazing. And then, you know, her dad was Mickey Hargitay, who was an actor, you know, at the time. And that's where she gets her such unique, you know, kind of beautiful, you know, features is from these two, you know, kind of like Adonis humans.
Right. Right.
Like, this is the product of that. And you're like, oh, yeah, that makes sense. That makes total sense. But, you know, a few years later, like, I didn't see her, like, after, you know, a couple times after that trip, you know, because I guess they didn't take that long. But I had her number, like, in my, like, my little, like, leather-bound, like, day planner.
Nice.
Same thing back in the day. And, like, I'd call and we'd leave messages and see each other every once in a while. And then she was on ER. You know, she had, like, a season on ER as, like, a recurring role. Like, hey, wait a minute, because that's an all-time favorite show.
Yeah.
And then in 99, like, she's the lead on SVU. I'm like, oh, my God. And now she's just an icon.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I love that weekend in Houston memory, you know, meeting this, you know, amazing person named Mariska Hargitay. And I doubt she would even remember the blip on the radar that I was in her life. But it certainly was.
It was a big moment for you, man.
It was great, and because she was super cool and super nice and gorgeous, of course. And
I bet you she remembers who you are.
Well, you know, I think if we were in the room, like, I actually have not seen her since that show started, you know, which is great.
Wow, well, yeah.
And to have a chance to go, hey, by the way. But I guarantee you there would be one of those, like, one or two of those inside jokes that we had that weekend. I think she would remember.
Right. If you if you dropped one of them, she would be like, how do you know? Oh,
so hopefully it would be a good recall for her. But yeah, I love that show. I've been watching, like I said, there was a long story, but it was cool.
No, that's a cool story, dude. Yeah. That's a really, really cool story.
I just watch a lot of TV. And what's weird now is because I'm, if my sleep's great or not great, or like I wake up and I have like a weird moment in the morning and the TV's on, like I'll flip to like the old channels. Mm-hmm. And what's great about current, my cable in the bedroom, it's not the digital cable. So there's others, so there's a few more channels. And you flip down, and my all-time favorite show is besides ER, that's my adult favorite show, but my all-time favorite life show is Emergency, which is about the paramedics and the firefighters in LA.
I believe you were telling us about that.
Like a happening in real time, like true life kind of thing that was going on in the late 60s, early 70s. And it's a fabulous show. And that's on every morning, and it starts at 6 or 7 and goes for like, you know, 3 or 4 hours. So
that's awesome.
I get to see some old Emergency episodes in the morning.
No,
and my wife, she bought me actually like the DVD box set of the entire series, like 12 years ago.
Oh, cool.
And I've never opened it. She's so mad. She's like, oh, I see you're watching Emergency, but you won't watch the DVDs. I don't.
She's like,
But
it's different.
It's a weird thing. Like, I have all the streamers. I don't have all the streamers. I have way too many streamers that I don't even watch. And to me, I don't know. I think I'm just an old fogue.
Yeah.
I think I'm just like a curmudgeon, because I'd rather flip down the channel, like go to the guide and go, oh, my show's coming on, instead of uncase a DVD and throw it in the machine or turn on the streamer. Because to me, unless you know exactly what you're doing, going to a streamer like Netflix and you don't know what you want to watch, I've sat there and wasted 90 minutes scrolling through the fucking interface.
I've done that last night.
And it's so frustrating. So I don't turn on the streamers unless it's on, if I'm going for a certain, and I have a list.
I bet you're like me, dude. You go on there and you start looking through stuff and you go, ooh, I'll watch this later. Just put it to your queue. Oh, like, that looks good. Put that over there. And then you turn it off and go to bed.
And the other thing, like, I've been hanging with, all during COVID and stuff, and everything's kind of shut down, and, you know, people can go out. And so my mom's a very active senior citizen. She likes to go out and do things. And of course you couldn't for a year.
Right. Yeah.
And so I was like, okay, I'm going to make a Dorothy film festival list of like just move. Cause she loves movies, but she doesn't want, she always watches movies like on TNT. I'm like, that's not watching a movie.
No. Yeah. Yeah.
cause half of it's cut out and like, you don't get the whole story and it has commercials, and we have all these streamers now. So, you know, let's I'll log in and we'll watch stuff. So I've had like a year long thing when I'm at my mom's place and, you know, we'll try to watch a movie.
That's
something
good.
Like this. And it's like, I've kind of curated like the Dorothy film festival list. And, I even included her. Like, I was doing I can't remember what the podcast was called, but it was this couple that It's one of those podcasts that gives you homework prior.
Oh, nice. Nice. Oh, yeah, yeah.
One of those. Yeah. And I'm like, wait, I got to do homework? And he was like, we're going to discuss this movie. And I was like, oh, but I haven't seen it. So now I got to fucking watch a movie. And the only place it was on Tubi.
Oh,
so
nice.
I had to go to Tubi. Which, ironically, Wolfman's Gotten Arts is now on Tubi. So in case
you
see, is it really?
So it was Urban Legends 2 Final Cut.
Nice.
Which was the movie of focus. And
excellent
I was like,
film.
Well, I was going to my mom's place and going to watch a movie anyway. I've got to watch this. So I just made her watch this with us. So she got to watch what most people call a bad horror genre sequel. But it wasn't that bad. You know, it's not
It's not that
and it's
bad.
It's actually got a lot of awesome names and faces in it as literally like the first thing they've ever done.
It could be cool. Like really way worse than that movie. That movie's okay.
It because what was awesome is because it's got a young Anthony Edwards in it. It's
yes.
And it's got my old pal Joey Lawrence in it.
Yep.
And it's got Jennifer Morrison, who was, of course, was the original cast member of one of my all-time favorite shows, which is House. You know,
and the Once Upon a Time.
Yes.
And after she left House to go do Once Upon a Time. And,
yeah.
Or did Once Upon a Time after she left House. Yeah. And because I love that show. I think it's a genius show. And that's on a lot during the day, so I watch a lot of House. And ironically, the shows I watch are about paramedics, ER doctors, and, like, diagnostic doctors. I'm like, and then I spend all this, like, 3 days in the hospital. Like, it took me a while to watch ER or House again. It took me, like, 3 weeks.
I was like, I don't want to be in a hospital setting again.
Yeah.
I don't blame you one bit, dude, at all.
But, yeah, so... Roundabout, you asked me what I was watching.
Yeah.
The same old shit.
Same shit, another day. Yeah. Hey, look, you know what?
Opportunity to watch new stuff. And,
nah, dude.
But even during COVID, I didn't even, like, I did three accomplishments during, like, 2020. And one, when things started getting weird, like March, I was like, oh, you know what? NYPD Blue is on, like, 5 episodes a day. And so in 1 week, you can watch an entire season.
Right.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
100%. But it's on cable, and I would. It's also streaming, but I won't turn it on Netflix and watch it that way. I just watch it on cable. And so I watched the entire season run, or entire series run of NYPD Blue, and then I was like, okay, here's my streaming thing I'm going to do because I can finally watch Homeland from beginning to end.
Oh yeah.
And so I binged Homeland, and. Because everybody was like, oh, this is the greatest show. And I watched like an episode. I was like, I hate this show. And that's my jam. Like Cold War spy stuff, espionage stories. That's my favorite content.
Oh, okay.
Mostly in books. I read those, you know, books like that. But, and I hated the show. I hated the show.
Really?
Because I hated the character. And I love Claire Danes. And I hated I hated this character. I was like, this would never happen. She's so annoying. She can't get her shit together. What is the problem here? What are they doing with this character? This is grinding my guts. And, like, and then if you – I don't know if you've watched the show or not. But
no.
Literally the character makes a decision in the last half of the last episode of the whole show that does the – it's the ultimate character decision. In this type of storyline, and it's not the ultimate sacrifice. That's too easy, like to jump in front of the bullet or something. It's not what happens. It's even harder than that. And I'm like, God damn it! What a payoff! I was mad for like an entire week and a half as I was binging this 81 episodes of the
God,
and then it paid off in the last 20 minutes, and I went, oh my God. That was funny. Good. And then I actually watched Queen's Gambit like earlier
end of last year. Yeah, I've heard a lot about that. I heard that was pretty good. I didn't watch any of it.
That was good. But other than that, it's basically the same Andre show.
Well,
I watch a lot of golf.
This is what I was gonna come down to because I watched two new things recently, and then I went back to watching terrible shit. Like I've been binging Ink Master, the tattoo show. I don't know why, just been watching it. Actually, for shits and giggles, I started contacting the guys from the Ink Master show, and like we got a few of those guys coming on, the artists, to talk to us.
Okay.
Yeah, well, yeah.
Ironically,
yeah.
My buddy Mike,
mm-hmm.
who I was playing tennis with,
yeah.
That got me to the hospital. He has a sleeve of a guy that was, I think, on season like one, season one or season two or something.
So no
there's
shit.
There's a connection.
That's yeah. pretty oh, cool. Cool. Yeah, there you go.
Yeah, he has a shop here. Yeah, shop in Vegas.
No shit. Okay, there's yeah. a few of those guys. Yeah, I don't know which one. I've been.
Anyway, I jumped in front of your thing. Keep rolling.
No, no, no.
Rolling.
You're good. You're good. No, so I got in touch with those guys. I've been doing that with the Ink Master show, but I also started watching the Comedy Central roasts.
Ugh. Oh, yes.
So like
yeah.
I've been rewatching those. But the new things that I watched recently is I watched the new Masters of the Universe show. Did you watch that yet?
I haven't yet, and I want to.
Yes. Yeah,
but I always let. I always let Twitter calm the fuck down for a little bit.
Yeah, I was gonna say, don't go look at the maniacs on there. I won't let out anything about it or whatever because I know this.
I mean, I read all about it. You know, it's like, okay. Spoilers don't bother me. I've gotcha. Read it all. I've read everybody's angry tweets.
Yeah,
I've read the kind of defense tweets, and I've read you know Kevin Smith stuff. But I definitely want to watch it only because that was. A giant part of our
right.
childhood.
Exactly. And that's, I'm a huge
as
fan.
As being entertained as kids. But for me, it's even more so because when I was a kid, during those years of the actual product line,
yeah,
I did about 10 Masters of the Universe commercials.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah, yeah. You said you were telling us that. Remember, remember I told you I was like, since the new stuff was coming out, I was like, we need to get you and some of the other kids out there and do it as grown-ups, but right. doing the advertisements.
Get the products and do the or be standing there like with our fake kids and
right
with
the toys. Exactly. Yeah. And I thought that'd be priceless. But no, I did watch this the new thing and like it's not as bad as people are saying. I mean, it's not what we grew up on, but I mean, mm-hmm. if you really go back and watch what we grew up on, it's not that great either.
But right. that was terrible. That animated show was awful.
Right.
I didn't even like it back when I was a kid. But I think with the thing that most people have a problem with when they let's take this and I haven't seen it yet, like I said,
right.
but and I wouldn't poo-poo it even if I didn't like it. People have to understand that this wasn't made for you.
Yeah.
This is made for a new generation by current creators.
Yeah.
Named Kevin Smith and others for a new generation of kids to watch something that was an old brand that has yeah. been redone. The same thing goes for Star Wars.
Yep.
Are the new Star Wars movies any good? No, they are not. They're not.
No. No.
this is from an OG Star Wars fan. However, Rogue One
was brilliant.
A fantastic movie.
Yeah.
Brilliant.
Because it's the most Star Wars-y movie of all the Star Wars movies, including the OGs. But people like that, okay, you hate Last Jedi, you hate The Force Awakens. It was like, great. First of all, it wasn't made for you. So right. you just get to enjoy it and shut up.
Right.
You can have an, I'm not saying you can't have an opinion or whatever, but you're not in control of it. You have no ownership and you can't get mad if you don't like something. You just have to say, I didn't really enjoy it. I wish it was this and move on. Great.
Yeah.
There's a ton of things that I wish the Star Wars prequels and the prequels, I don't even, those don't exist. But no. the last trilogy, I wish they were. They would have been amazing if you're like, hey,
right.
you know what? I have no ownership. I didn't make it. I didn't write it. I don't work for Disney. I don't work for Lucasfilm. And
I wish I did.
So what can I do? Like, nothing.
No.
I'm in the same boat as all. I don't go on Twitter and just.
You need to. Maybe your voice is what needs to be.
I smash my own testicles on, this is so bad. How could you? You owe me. It's like, what do you. Who owes you what? Nobody owes you anything.
Yeah.
Oh, God. Yeah, I. Well, I don't even know the name of the. Whatever the second one of the last trilogy was. But
The Last Jedi, Ryan Johnson.
Last Jedi, yeah.
Well, the Johnson film, right? Yeah, that was the worst one. The other two I could stomach, but that one to me was just terrible. It was beautiful to look at. Don't get me wrong.
It was.
It was
and it has
gorgeous.
The best shot, one of the best sequences or shot in any Star Wars movie. And they missed the opportunity of who should have done that maneuver. And I was like, that was what an amazing moment. Mm-hmm. Doesn't save the whole movie.
No.
But it's when the ship goes into hyperdrive and goes through the big start. Like,
right.
That was amazing.
Right. Yeah. And like talking I said,
about, you know, the ultimate sacrifice type thing.
Yeah.
That should have been Leia.
Yeah. Yeah. Thank you. You know, yeah. And there was a few moments in there where, you know, they missed. You know what I'm saying? Like, it was like, come on, guys. But again, we didn't write the films.
That's right.
We didn't make the, you know, but we can have our opinions just like our assholes. Everybody's right. Got one, so.
But what we're doing is we're saying, what I do with that movie is I pick out the things that I liked.
Yeah.
Right.
Like I said, it was beautiful.
The whole movie? It's like, it was okay. I know it was fine. It wasn't great in my mind. Some people loved it. Millions of people saw that movie.
Yeah.
Like, it's like. Are they all wrong? Are they all wrong? Like, if they enjoyed it, that's fine. That's what movies are for.
Right.
But I pick out things like, there was this part I really liked. This was really cool. And that sequence where she busts the shit, that was amazing. That was so badass.
Man, yeah. when you just said that millions of people saw this movie, and then I wanted to, the only thing that came to mind was when Obi-Wan says, he's holding his head. He goes, oh, what's wrong? It sounds like the million voices screamed at once and then was silenced. That was the first thing.
That's funny.
I was like, oh.
Yeah, they were sitting there mouth agog in the movie theater going, what just happened?
Yeah. Like, what did I just watch?
I'll pick either of those, any of those three over fucking Revenge of the Sith, though. Sorry,
I will take all three new ones over any of them.
Yeah.
Really? Okay. All right. I enjoyed the films because they were Star Wars films. Like, same with the new ones. I just sat there and watched them. I was happy to see the characters that I loved. It was terrible. Most of the writing was awful in some of, you know, in those films. But I got what I wasn't expecting, you know, I don't know. You can't expect Empire all over again.
That's right. And the only place I got that was Rogue One.
Right.
And because that's really a good movie. And it's the way it's shot, the way it feels like the first one. It feels like Star Wars. And it feels a little Empire-y just in kind of because it's a story, you know, but then Rogue One, for me, since we're getting nitty gritty, the only thing I didn't like about Rogue One is sort of how Saw Gerrera was a proto Vader.
Yeah.
But then also that you never, if that movie was so gritty and even with the camera angles and, like, you know, the dustiness of being, you know, in the ships and on the ground with them, and the characters were great.
Oh yeah.
Sure. But then you use this technology to put a fake Grand Moff Tarkin, and it's just an animated character. I was like, why? Because you can? Just because you can, should you?
Right.
And then at the end, they do it with Leia. They de-age Leia. I'm like, what are you doing?
Yeah. I did find it pretty amazing. Like, the technology. I thought it was incredible.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I didn't mind it with Leia since it was so brief.
Yeah.
But with Grand Moff Tarkin.
It was way too
much. You know, like, when they showed it briefly, I was like, oh, okay. Yeah, I mean, it kind of looks like a video game, but whatever. I mean, you know, you can't get, what was it, Christopher Plummer? You can't.
No, he was dead.
Get him in there.
He's dead.
So I get that. But then when it was, and I haven't seen the movie since it first came out, but I mean, wasn't there like scenes with him talking?
Yeah, there was way too much. And really, all you did was maybe a profile or a reflection.
Right.
Oh my God, he's talking to Tarkin. This is amazing. I know right where I'm at.
Yeah.
I know right where I'm at. But you know what it looked like? It looked like looked like Schmeagol, and it looked like Snoke. It was the same technology, even though you're just mapping it off a guy. I'm like, did anybody ask if it was okay with, you know, like his people?
Right.
Like,
yeah.
We're gonna totally reinvent this guy. It's gonna look almost real. But you're dead. So
it's
really
pretty close. We get he's dead, but you know, Peter Cushing's, come on, you know.
Yeah. I mean, in such an iconic person like Peter Cushing, you're like, maybe you give him a little like it's a reflection or like a profile, and that's it.
Yeah. Not a whole speaking line. Yeah.
Oh, it's like three. You're like, oh my gosh. And then like the voice was even like not authentic. It was like, look, we can do so much with software now. It's insane. And it sounded exactly like him, but it was not him.
Right, right, yeah.
Look, I have a microphone and this computer, and I can sing a song and make me sound good. And I'm not a very good singer.
Hell yeah.
and that's just with basic stuff. Like, but with Disney shit, you can do whatever you want.
Right. We can build anything.
And I was like, why? And that's what I didn't like about the prequels, is they were all just one big animated green screen movie with actors floating in front of it. I was like, this doesn't even look.
Well, a lot of even the actors didn't like that, because that's why we have only like what was his name? I can't remember his name in the fucking movie. In the prequels, he was General Zod.
Terrence Stamp.
That's why he is not in the last two, because he was complaining that he didn't want to act in front of cardboard cutouts, because that's what they did. They brought him into a room and they had two cardboard cutouts standing there, and Lucas told him, go ahead and act, and he said, we'll add the people in after. And he's like, I'm not doing this.
Right.
And he goes, okay, well, I'll give your part to somebody else. That was it.
And that's an interesting, you know, it's funny. And what's crazy is, we all went to the movie theater and watched them.
Yes. Yeah. Dude, I stood in line for like 14 hours to get tickets.
Well, that was dumb.
Well, for the first one, you know.
Go the next day. I went on opening day for all those as well.
But it was just so much fun. It's
like we all go. It doesn't matter. Yeah. And we get our fix, whether we like it or not. Point out the things that you do like. I
walked out of Revenge of the Sith. I had to go back and watch it another time. It was my birthday, and like a friend took. She's like, "What do you want to do?" I was like, "Dude, new Star Wars movie. Let's go. Let's do this." Like we pick up a six pack. We're like drinking in line outside the theater and stuff. You know, because it was like a lot. Like it might have been like, if not opening weekend day, like the first week. So it's like, there's a line out there, and it was at the Britannia Theater, which is like kind of, you know, like an old time like artsy theater here.
And it seems like maybe like 40 people, so it's not a very big theater.
You can pack them in now. You know, kind of Alamo Draft House-y sort of thing, I guess, maybe, from what I've heard. I've never been there. And I'm just sitting there and I'm watching it, and like I think I walked out whenever like the Emperor popped up, looking like right after Mace Windu zapped him, and like, dude, people were laughing, and I'm like, this is supposed to be like this serious one, but it's fucking goofy, and I just turned to my friend Tracy and was like, dude, there's a bar like three blocks up from here. You want to just go drink? And she's like, yeah. It's like, all right. And I went back like a few weeks later and just watched it by myself. And I was like, that's still like of all the Star Wars movies, that to me was
the worst one. Really?
It's not good.
Well, I can tell you this. I haven't watched those clones or that one probably since they've been out. Like, you know, I own them, but I've never watched them.
Right.
Like, I've seen the first one over and over again. Phantom Menace a bunch of times.
Oof, that one's tough too.
Yeah, but, you know, I mean, are you an angel? Come on, it's the best line in the fucking movie. Are you an angel?
I like the pod race. Like, that was cool.
Yeah.
I remember seeing that in the theater. I was like, ooh, this is intense.
A good friend of mine PA'd on that, and because he used to work up at Lucasfilm, and ironically I was working in Las Vegas in the kind of hotel casino development world, working with my then brother-in-law at the time. And at that time when they were prepping for Phantom Menace, the ILM model makers were building our hotel model.
Oh, nice.
Because it was this giant scale volcano. It was a volcano. And because we had created a hotel that was a mountain, that was actually an active volcano, and the hotel was inside of the volcano. And it was very cool. So they made this like two scale giant, like 8 foot high volcano model.
Damn.
But so we got to go up and we shot like this industrial film, which was sort of the pitch piece. And so we went up there to screen it because they produced it. And we went to go in the model shop, and in the model shop, they're working on all this shit for Phantom Menace.
Oh, fuck, dude.
And so I'm like, oh my God, this is the, and I, like, I met the guy who built the Millennium Falcon, you know, like in 70s. I'm like, oh my God. And all these model makers are the same guys that made our hotel model, which was awesome.
Oh, cool.
But while we were sitting there looking at the model, there is a guy to my right, and I looked at this table. It was like this giant craft table. And he had like 8 different R2 dome heads sitting there, and he was painting the blue on it by hand. And I went, are you painting R2-D2 heads? He's like, yes, but don't tell anyone.
He's like, yes.
I'm like, okay. And then like I looked down right next to me, and there was the actual bucket R2 that Kenny Baker sat in.
You're fucking kidding me, dude.
And it had a thing on it, had like a sign on it. It said, like, Hero R2 bucket with Kenny Baker custom seat. Do not touch.
Oh, my God.
So, of course, I touched it.
Right.
And
goddamn right.
And like, but what's cool when you go into this, you know, all this, none of this stuff is there anymore, obviously, because Disney has it. But it was just sort of like this workshop. And there's like TIE fighters hanging from the ceiling. And like, and then just kind of like, I don't want to say discarded, but not like a display of honor. Like,
yeah,
like, Han Solo and Carbonite just leaned up against the back wall.
Jesus Christ.
And I'm like, is that? And they go, yeah. And I was like, oh my God. Like, why is this like not in a case of its own Carbonite, like on display somewhere? I was like, this is insane.
Well,
someone just has kind of their just, like, jacket up against hanging from his hand.
Yeah.
That's right. And like a spitball on it or something.
Like, and, right after.
This drawn dick on his face.
The weirdest thing. And I was like, can I have that? And they were like, no.
But I mean, you're like, you're not using it, dude. You're just sitting it over in their corner. Come on, man.
Yeah, yeah. It literally was just like in the shop. Now, granted, when you, I've been fortunate enough to go because I interviewed them all in their shop for Wolfman's Got Nards, but all the creature effects guys that worked on Monster Squad as literal kids, but now they're adults and they own these giant shops. And I've been to their shops like Legacy and Studio ADI, Amalgamated Dynamics, and like Steve Wang's shop. And you go to their thing, all of their cool shit's just hanging out on the wall or
that's
in the corner.
So cool, dude.
Like, wait a minute. And dude, like, you go to Tom Woodruff's shop and you go in the back. And what really sucked about that day, because we have this little kind of walkthrough during Tom's interview. And his interview in a chair takes place in like their display room, which is super cool. But we can only show stuff that they own, not from movies. I'm like, ah, crap. And then we wanted to walk through the shop and do like a walkthrough. And he's like, that's awesome, but we can't show any of this stuff right here. And I'm like, yeah, but that's the cool shit you're working on right now. He's like, yeah, you can't shoot that. Oh. And what it was is, as I'm in Tom Woodruff's shop, who for Monster Squad was the guy that did the Frankenstein makeups.
Oh, nice.
But was also in the Gilman suit. He was his first performance as a creature.
Oh, nice.
Became the other half of his career. This was the first time he was in that suit that Steve Wang and Matt Rose built. But what's crazy, and the fact that Steve Wang and Matt Rose's Gilman became a proto and a paint scheme for the Predator. Tom Woodruff's shop was building all of the Predator suits for the Shane Black, Fred Decker, The Predator that was coming out that they were shooting at that
time.
No shit. So that's what we couldn't show. We had to do this one angle in the shot. We couldn't show anything. We showed like the back wall. Nothing was on it. Because all of this Predator shit was everywhere.
Oh.
And we couldn't show any of that on camera. And damn, I'm like, dude. Damn it. But then, you know, he was up and, you know, what kind of like a cool full circle that, you know, Tom Woodruff works on a movie called Monster Squad, is in the Gilman suit who Steve Wang and Matt Rose created, and Steve Wang came up with the paint scheme, and then they built the Predator suit for the Arnold Schwarzenegger movie the first one. And then 30-something years later, Tom Woodruff is recreating that Predator suit
for the new movie
for Shane Black and Fred Decker.
Damn, co-written dude.
That Shane's directing Predator. I was like, this is a weird full circle thing. This is kind of cool. Yeah, man.
They just announced there's a new Predator movie coming out called Skulls.
I saw that. And it's going to be a prequel. It's just on a streamer, right?
Yeah, it's a prequel to...
Yeah, it's a prequel, and it's supposed to be like dark and weird. And doesn't it take place like in
space? I think.
I think the alien comes down. If I read it right, I think, and the lead is like a female, like indigenous, like native.
Okay, so it's going to be like
period piece. Yeah, it's going to be like 1800s or 1700s.
See, because I've always said this, and I've said this for a bunch of years. Is I always wanted to write. I never did do it though. I always wanted to write a Predator film, but I always wanted to do it with the five guys that Schwarzenegger found skinned in the movie.
Oh yeah.
Like, oh yeah. Yeah. I wanted
Jim Hopper's
crew. Yeah.
Yeah. Team.
Yeah. Like, why not? Like, there's a reason why they were called to the jungle to go find, you know, like what's going on. And then that's what happens, right. You know, that kind of, you end in a bad note. Everybody's dead.
that's right. And that would have been a much more enjoyable movie.
Right.
And
right?
The Predator kind of ends that way too. Cause everybody dies except for Schwarzenegger.
Right. Exactly. Exactly.
Those are good, not feel good endings. I like
it. I'm the same way. I enjoy that.
But yeah, that's a great movie. I mean, it's a great movie. That movie still kind of holds up.
It does. So does Alien. So does Alien.
Alien certainly does, just because that was so scary. You know, a lot of people say, is that a monster movie, is it a horror movie, is it a sci-fi movie, I think it's all of those.
It's all of them, dude. It's such a great film,
and there's very few things that, you know, that can kind of fit that bill. And I don't know what the original Predator was. It was a creature feature. It was, you know, it was an alien movie. It's sci-fi, but it's an action movie first. Mm-hmm.
You know? Yeah, I mean,
Jesse Ventura is carrying a fucking Gatlin gun on,
right? Yeah. I ain't got time to bleed. I mean, come on. Greatest lines of ever.
And again, Shane Black, you know, as an actor and a script doctor. And, you know, that's a neat story how that whole movie got saved to actually become what it did. So, I mean, it's kind of cool. All these things are kind of connected.
Yeah,
And not to the bad Star Wars prequels.
Exactly, right. Exactly.
Man. See how we transitioned into something that, you know, that you can talk about and enjoy.
And you know what, dude? Look, honestly, and that's one of the big reasons I love having you on the show, because we all have so much in common, and it's such a good, you just feel good, you know, like. There's no pressure when you're on the show. We can sit down and just start rolling with all this stuff because we all love all of this, you know, all the same things. The sci-fi movies, the horror movies, the TV, you know. Exactly. It's just a lot of fun, man. And
like I said, I probably mentioned it one of the last times, you know, it's like I am super fortunate to have been involved with something like Monster Squad, even though it tanked at the box office. You know, 30 years later has this amazing kind of status.
Right.
And as an individual, by default, I was just the kid. I was just the kid in the Stephen King Rule shirt. But you know, people, I have a status
in,
you know, in the genre, which is amazing.
Right.
And I certainly appreciate that. I think it's super cool. And you get to appreciate that. Now, the problem is you get to meet a lot of horror fans, like filmmakers and fans that know everything about every horror. And I'm like, I didn't see that. What are you talking about? Oh, I've never seen that. Now, there's some obscure stuff that I have seen that some people haven't, but I am no – everybody thinks because I have this association and this status, like I'm a horror, like, aficionado. I was like, I know a lot of it. And I appreciate a lot of it. I do not know what you know. This is insane. What are you talking about?
Well, I mean, there's so much that comes out, man.
It's just so much. From the indie, the last 20 years. Horror has always been a popular genre.
Yeah, it's crazy.
But we're just flooded, right? And I was more of a sci-fi kid. I love sci-fi shit. And if those things can cross over, that's really cool. Like Alien
and Predator,
or Aliens or Predator, or Aliens versus Predator. Yeah. Which I wasn't
I was okay with it.
Yeah, it wasn't bad.
I was okay with it.
The top genres for those films are Predator 1 and Aliens with the S. Those two films are incredible.
Absolutely fantastic. And whether you like the prequels to Alien, like Prometheus and that, you know.
Oh, I like Prometheus a lot.
I think they're totally fine because it's about the story.
Yeah.
Exactly. And there's a good stories in there. But you know, you said you can go on, you can enjoy all. I enjoy all types of movies. It doesn't matter. I like old movies, I like new movies, I like movies from. There's great movies from every single decade ever since they started making movies.
Yep, you just gotta look.
But black and white's totally fine with me. No effects, love it. Just a neat story that we've seen 100 times, told in a different way, dig it. And there's some movies that are, you know, my range is so wide. Like, I'm not just one. I don't have a tunnel vision, even with TV shows, except for a lot of them are about medical or lawyers. It's really weird. I love cop shows, too. I've always been, you know, figured out network procedural cop detective stuff. That's why I love Blue Bloods. Like, that show's been on for, like, 15 years. just because, you know, the way I like the characters and the stories of that show. It's got Tom Selleck.
Yeah, I was going to say, you can't beat Magnum P.I. Right. Come on.
You cannot. I just watched 2 episodes of Magnum P.I. this morning. because I woke up at 4 and it was on. but, you know, there's a wide range of movies. Like, if it's on, you got to watch it. And that's what's great about movies. You know, when we're sitting around and if you're flipping through cable. Because, yeah, we have the instant access. We can watch whatever movie we want to if you have the service. And if you don't, you can rent it. but, like, when you're flipping through and, like, you're like, oh, shit, I get Showtime free this month. That's awesome. Oh, my gosh. My favorite movie's on. Or even if it's on TV with commercials, sometimes you'll watch it because it's your movie. It's one of your movies.
I agree, man.
And that's what's cool about it. I think I'm just a product of one, my age and my demographic of generation. So I'm a network kind of tentpole, network procedural junkie because that's what I came up not only watching but I was doing them. So it's weird, too.
Right?
You know, I've done a ton of TV series, and you're like, oh, this is what it is, and like new shows that don't have any. That don't have commercial breaks or don't have a cadence, or if they're not procedurals, you're like, I'm uncomfortable with, like, did it end?
Yeah.
Did it end? Oh, no, we got to go to the next. It never ends. You're like, oh, so the story never ends.
It just keeps on going, man.
Just keeps on going. Like, you watch True Detective. Like, you're like, this was really good, but I've got to get 9 episodes to get a payoff?
Yes.
What the fuck? It was like...
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You get so conditioned by, you know, by TV, but there's some great TV out there now. I mean, they're doing such good stuff. It's amazing. And TV is where it's at. Movies are kind of falling off to the wayside in the last 5 or 6 years. They really are. Yeah. TV is where it's at.
And especially with the COVID stuff, it really put a damper on film.
You know, it did. And that sucked for 2 reasons. One, because I was releasing a film in COVID.
Right.
You know, albeit a documentary, but you can't go and do that release thing. And it sucked because we had been delayed by a year. So we would have already been, and we would have been in much better shape if we had released when it was supposed to. And then I was, I'm a producer on this great script that Henry McComas wrote, who made the documentary. And it's a hard time getting a movie made during COVID. So we reworked this thing left and right, gotten involved with an agreement with a company out of the UK that we probably shouldn't have gotten involved in. But you know, now it's back in our hands, and you know, it's weird because if there was any movie that was out there that could have been made during peak of COVID, this was it. And so it was just frustrating not to be able to make this movie. And so, you know, we're still trying to get that one, you know, kind of, you know, out there and interest and shot. And, you know, it's a process and it's a hassle. And, you know, it's that's the movie making part of the things that we talking about. So we want this movie made and out, and like the movie I didn't get to go do. I was a little mad and disappointed, and I felt like I let my friends down because it happened like a week before I was supposed to go and start shooting, and I was the lead in this movie. And it's a little tiny movie, but my friend Derek Johnson wrote it kind of with me in mind, with his kind of writing partner Frank and his producer partner Chris. Like we're all pals.
Yeah.
And he called me back in April. I was like, "Hey man, what are you doing in July?" I was like, "I don't know." He's like, "Cause my project that we were going to do didn't happen, but I've got to do something. And if you're in, I would just want to know." I was like, "You want me to? Yeah, I'm in. Whatever it is, let's do it." He's like, I'm writing the script right now. Like, we're going to go write it and I'll send you the draft and, you know, we'll tweak it and I got to set it up. And it's going to be super low budge, but it's going to be awesome. And, you know, Chris will work with you on like the logistics and the timing because we're going to, he goes, and we're going to base out of my lake house in East Texas." And I went, "Wait, where and when?" So again, it's East Texas in July. And I'm like, what did I just commit to? And I got the script and I dug it and I really wanted to do it. And literally the night before my heart attack, I had a Zoom call with the other lead, the female lead. And, you know, just to get to know each other, because like in 7 days, we're going to be doing a scene together.
Right.
And we haven't been face to face. And so it was like, let's have a Zoom call. And then the next morning I end up having a heart attack and I have to not be able to, I can't go do this movie. But you well, know, I'm that's because sure you love movies and you love doing them and you love watching them. I was so frustrated. And I felt like I let my guys down. And they were like, "Dude, don't worry about it." Like, we'll adjust. And they almost shut down, but then like they had to make the movie. And I was like, I was in the ICU trying to replace myself. I was like, "Who do you want me to call? Who do you want me to call?" They were like, "Yeah, don't worry about that. We'll handle that."
Like, I don't know what else to do. I feel so bad. Yeah, you just had a heart attack. That's why you feel bad. You feel bad because you had a heart attack.
That's right. But I felt bad. I felt like letting Derek and Chris down. And but what ended up happening is, you know, they found an awesome, you know, replacement and tweaked it and it's going to be cool. And Derek's like, "Dude, just do the next one. Like, we'll do another one. Like, let's don't worry about it." And I felt good about that. I still wish just rapped on it. Like, you just did a Facebook post like the day before. He was like, "We just rapped on Bloodstreams." I'm like, I was supposed to be there.
Well, look.
But the crazy thing is that we were in literally in the middle of nowhere, East Texas, which would have been awesome.
Well, it also would have been really bad because if you had had your heart attack there, you'd have probably been dead.
That was my next point. So I realized that I need to step back from being annoyed that I didn't go do this movie. And again, another one of those things that worked out in my favor. And because if it happened a week later where we were, I wouldn't have made it.
Did they say like anything that, you know, what you could have done if you hadn't been like so close and so fortunate to get in like so quickly? Or is it just,
we have mentioned a little bit at the earlier, I wanted to circle back to something. So like I was playing tennis and I was with my friend who used to be, used to be actually a volunteer EMT and worked with the fire department years ago. And he was checking me out and he was like, "All right." And after about 10 minutes, he's like, "Okay, we're out of here. You're not looking good." And I was like, "Yeah, I'm trying to determine if," I was actually sat there and said, "I'm trying to determine if I'm having a heart attack or not." And so we got out of there and we got in his car. Mm-hmm. But as soon as I started feeling really bad, because I thought it was something else.
Right.
So that's the other thing. I thought I was just dehydrated and my blood sugar was low because that had happened before playing tennis.
Right.
And then after the fact, I'm like, or was it a heart-related thing before and not low blood sugar?
Wow.
So you're thinking like, "Oh, crap." But it just didn't get better. And so I was with my friend. I was rolling around on the side of the court for probably 10 or 12 minutes while I was having the initial stages of a heart attack. And then we finally got in the car and went to that first urgent care and then had to get ambulanced over. That worked out fine. But the lesson here is, if you're with people or not, the only reason we didn't call EMS is because I was there with Mike and Mike could have gotten me down the street quicker than even if we did call an ambulance.
Right.
But rule of thumb, if you're having an issue, you don't feel good, don't try to get there yourself. Mm-hmm. Just call.
Right.
And, cause if you have that feeling and don't wait too long, because they can start getting you the critical help in the early stages that can help you make it. And even in my case, I was not far away from the first place, and I was not far away from the big ER in the hospital and the cath lab that saved life. But the difference is if that hospital is 2 more miles down the road.
Yeah.
Or if I'm on the other side of town, or if I was playing golf instead of tennis,
mm-hmm.
it's a different situation. Probably wouldn't have turned out the same. Jeez. So, you know, the kind of learn here lesson is, one, if you have like, you know, some mild symptoms or you think it's bad, get it checked out. Mm-hmm. Number one. Yeah. You'd rather be my new kind of like saying is you'd rather be wrong than too late.
Right.
So I kind of like the way that rings. The other thing is don't try to do it on your own. It is smarter to call for help. Like call 911 because they could, you know, even if they're, you know, no matter where you are, they can probably get to you quicker than, especially if you could try to get yourself there. If I was driving on the highway and this usher went down, I probably wouldn't have made it because I wouldn't have been able to operate the vehicle. I wouldn't have been able to get off because that happened very quick. I was non-operational after about a minute or two.
Wow.
And that's, you know, one of the weird things that, again, that happened in my favor, that I happened to be playing tennis with two people and, you know, they were, you know, monitoring me and watching out. And then once it looked bad, like we got out of there and didn't mess around. And that's the only reason I made it.
So were you feeling like, you can go to what you're saying, then we can come back to that.
No, it's a fine question. You know, it's like I said, I thought it was initially like I was dehydrated and my blood sugar was down because it had happened the last two times I had played tennis. And then now after the fact, you're like, maybe it wasn't that.
Right.
Maybe it was this all along. I just couldn't. I felt woozy. I felt not together. And the first sign of something that's really, really bad is I noticed as when I stopped, because I've been playing tennis and we're playing indoor and it's hot here. I'm in Vegas currently. Mm-hmm. But it's indoors, but it's a little hot, it's a little humid, so you're sweating a little bit.
Right.
But when I stopped hitting because I wasn't feeling good and I went to the side, in about 30 seconds time, I felt like I sweated out more sweat than I did in the last 30 minutes.
Wow.
It just instantaneously just covered and just drenched. And that's a sign your body's freaking out and something's negative. So that's, and then I kind of had this, you know, I thought it was just dehydration or blood sugar because I hadn't eaten a huge breakfast and I was playing. I didn't want to be lugging around pancakes or something.
Right.
And that subsided, but then it didn't get any better. And I just couldn't get comfortable. I couldn't get situated. My brain was foggy, for a while. And one weird time, and I don't know what was happening, but it was like everything was kind of black and I saw these like bright colors like shooting through my eyes. And that's like your blood pressure's going down apparently. And then I just started getting weaker and not feeling as good. I didn't have that elephant on my chest thing, you know, that's kind of stereotypical. I didn't have the, you know, shooting paralysis in my left arm. Mm-hmm. When I finally sat up, I had a little stripe of discomfort up by my collarbones.
Mm-hmm.
So just across, just below my neck. And then every like 20 seconds or so, I'd feel like this little pulse of discomfort down both my arms at the same time.
Hmm.
Huh. And that's when I was like, I don't think this is dehydration.
Right.
I think I could be having a heart attack. And that's when I mentioned it to Mike and he came over. My pulse was non-existent.
Jeez.
And he was like, all right, we're out of here. And that's what I was. I was in no pain.
Mm-hmm.
I was just concentrating on kind of being mobile. I walked out of that place. Like I walked out the back door and then walked through the whole gym facility to get out to the parking lot and get in his car. And then I walked into the first ER. Like I was hanging on Mike, but I was walking in, walking into my heart attack as I was having it. Which is probably dumb, but maybe okay. But I was never, everybody kept asking me, like, okay, what's your pain level? Like, on a scale of 1 to 10. I had like 4 different people in 3 different locations asking this. I'm like, okay, what's your pain level on a scale of 1 to 10, 10 being the most excruciating pain you've ever felt? I was like, I'm not in any pain. Wow. And they're like, no, seriously, you're having a massive heart attack. What pain level? Because I got to write it down on the thing. I'm like, I'm not having any. Okay, a 3. Right. And they get like, okay, 3. And then like, is it more than, like, I get upstairs in the next place. And they're like, okay, you had a 3. Is it more? I'm like, okay, a 4. I'm not in pain. Yeah. And that's what's scary, because pain you associate with accidents or trauma or bad shit. And just because you're not having pain doesn't mean something's wrong.
Right.
So keep that in mind. But I was alert. I was cognizant. I was asking questions, answering questions. My body's freaking out. I was a little compulsive. I was uncontrollably shaking. I even apologized to like the second ER. I was like, sorry, I'll try to get my right leg from shaking. But I think it's just because I'm freezing. And they're like, you're not freezing. You're dying. That's why your leg's shaking. And but I didn't know that till after the fact. And because my body's just going super shocky.
Right.
And,
you're losing everything. Yeah, your temperature drops.
Yeah, and then by that time, I had and I'm not a big, like, narcotics guy. Like, mm-hmm. I don't even eat gummies. But, like, by this time, I had, nitro. I had heparin. I had morphine. Then I got fentanyl, because that's to calm your whole body, because I was, like, my body was flipping out.
Yeah.
And then I was so alert and answering questions. Like, when they put me in the elevator to go upstairs to the cath lab, the cath lab nurse was about to give me more fentanyl. And I was like, what is that? She's like, it's fentanyl. And I was like, they just gave me that downstairs. Mm. And she's like, oh, they did? And I was like, oh, yeah.
Jesus.
I realized, me and my silly, snarky ass was in an elevator. I said, yeah, don't prince me in an elevator. And she's like, okay, we'll hold off for now. And I feel bad. Pardon to, you know, Prince Nelson Rogers, my all-time favorite artist of all time. Mm-hmm. Also the star of one of my favorite movies of all time.
Let's not do this. 1999, baby.
Perfect movie. Perfect.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing wrong with that film. But then I was never out of it. I was never unconscious that I recall. Mm-hmm. And I was never in pain. And everybody else was like, weren't you terrified? I was like, I don't think so. I think I was concentrating on getting through this moment. Right. And I think fear or anxiety, I don't know if I was consciously avoiding it or focusing on something else, but I was really trying to just focus on being calm, answering the question, and getting through this moment, because I've injured myself. I've pushed myself physically playing sports and basketball in college and, outdoor adventures. And, you know, you push yourself, you always push yourself. And I think this was I realized I was going through the ultimate, like, obstacle course.
Yeah.
And, you know, the ultimate challenge physically and mentally, all in this short amount of time. And I think I was just really trying – I'm not trying to make myself sound cool, because I really don't know what it was. But I think I would, I remember I was just trying to focus and concentrate on getting through what was going on. Because what's so weird, everything that happened, there was a massive amount of experience in a very short amount of time.
Yeah.
All of this took place from when I started feeling a little weird hitting a volley. So I was at the net. I was volleying great. And because the guy on the other side of the court, our buddy Greg, is just hammering forehands at me. And I'm, you know, one hand, backhand slice, you know, volley back to him. And I'm like, oh, my volley's on today. And then I started feeling weird. From that moment to
– So you didn't just use this to fake to get out of the game. Then,
because getting your ass kicked or something, right?
That's right.
Getting some losses. Yeah. All right, cool.
And from that moment, which was the kind of initial minute, to when the stent was in and I was like done in the cath lab, was not even close to like 40 minutes.
Jesus.
Wow. I mean, it was like less than an hour, you know, like 40 minutes. Like, I don't even, it's super quick.
Yeah.
And that's a lot of experience in a very compressed amount.
Yeah.
Of time. And that's what kind of, like, you're like, you don't almost don't know how to reconcile. And now, kind of the anxiety or the, you know, the aftermath or the, you know, the fear or whatever, that comes later a little bit when you actually think about it. Mm-hmm. And you're like, wow, that was, what the hell just happened?
Yeah.
And now it's been 4 weeks and, or 4 weeks and 2 days. And the only way I describe it, it was like, it feels like it was yesterday. And yet it feels like it never happened. Like it didn't even, it wasn't real.
So crazy.
And I'm only lucky that I can be silly like that.
Yeah.
And say weird stuff about it or joke about myself. And, right. You know, one of the things I needed to do and wanted to do was, you know, post a terrible picture of me, you know, sitting in the you know, with my hair all fucked up and these, you know, yellow socks on. And I was like, oh, this is a great upgrade. Just caption this, like, just let it, you know, caption this. And, you know, and then I was like, I got to do a video in this giant hospital gown with my butt flapping out the back.
That was hysterical, mm-hmm. by the way.
Yeah.
And I was like, and I was mad because, like, the night before I had that Zoom call with the actress. I didn't go home and I didn't cut my, cause I cut my own hair. It was like, I didn't cut my hair and my hair looked terrible in the ICU. I'm like, damn it. I'm like, I'm worried about other stuff. And, but yeah, the butt video, I was like, I've got to do that. That's so me.
Right.
And, apparently it was a hit.
So yeah. Mm-hmm.
Great Instagram video.
I did see a lot of cute asses on there. Like they were saying, people were commenting that, you know.
That was an ancillary benefit, which was not planned, but certainly made someone that was trying to recover feel better.
Right, exactly. Yeah.
Especially when a lot of people that you don't know say it, and then other people that you do know say it.
There you go.
You know, my favorite was you know, lifelong pal, you know, Nicole Eggert, who grew up together, is, you know, one of the most gorgeous people on the planet.
Yeah.
And she's like, oh my God, I'm so glad you're okay and you made it. Nice buns, by the way. I'm like, the day made.
Right.
You know, you're like, 16-year-old yes. Andre can go back and get nice buns from Nicole. I'll take it.
Exactly. Yeah.
But we've been, God, Nicole and I have been friends since we were probably 6 years old or something.
Wow.
That's awesome.
But yeah, I didn't make that video for those reactions, but it was right. Awesome to get those reactions. I just made it because it was an excuse to show my butt.
And you and you were trying to put some levity behind the seriousness of what was going on.
I was, and that was all selfish. I was, you know,
of course.
The levity is, I think, the best way to cope, and really the. Because I'm a deep thinker. I'm a serious thinker. I take things to, you know, things mean a lot to me. Right, you know, things have a lot of weight to them. But I'm also a funny, snarky, you know, fun maker.
Yeah.
And you know, and if you can be silly, that's better. And if you can be silly about yourself, that's the best. Yeah. And because we're all way too serious about ourselves anyway, because we're literally not that we're not that significant.
Yeah, exactly.
And then I really, you know, I was watching one of the I have a masterclass membership, and I was watching Neil deGrasse Tyson, and you know, his masterclass is like How to Think Like a Scientist, and or something like that. And it's like his opening monologue is literally, do you think you're special? Let me tell you something. You're not that fucking special. He's like, do you think, like, when you walk down the street and you find like a dollar bill laying on the ground, that it's was made it, like, you're special because you found money? He's like, you know what? There was a lot of money that you didn't find, so you're not that special. And I was like, this is how I thought. I was like, this is amazing, but also makes you feel a little small. But right. I've always had that context of mine. So I was like, you've got to have that understanding, but then you also realize as a human being, you're impactful to a few people.
Yeah.
And how do you go about your day and not be a dick? You know, right. Like, you know, whether you can help someone or physically help them, financially help them, or just emotionally help them, or just what's crazy in our current kind of society, maybe humans have always been that way. People find it extraordinary when you're not an asshole.
Right.
Yeah.
Like, wait a minute. Isn't not an shouldn't that be our, like, our baseline?
It should be our
floor.
Yeah.
Is to not be an asshole. But now to not be an asshole is like, you are an exalted one. You are not an asshole.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you for existing.
We have got this backwards, folks. And I got, there are some other, I got some, you know, some good news this morning about something. And I was on the way to the place where I get my car worked on. And I got there and, you know, it's hot here. I mean, it actually feels really good here right now. You know, we're in Vegas currently, like I said, and there was a lady with her kid there. And the kid was probably eight years old. And I walk in the front desk to drop my keys off. And she's like, holy shit, it's $55 to get to my house from here in an Uber. And I'm like, yeah, Uber's expensive right now. And, you know, nothing's up here in the town. And she's like, well, I guess we have to walk. And I'm like, it's 102 out right now. Like, you're gonna like, and I was like, I don't know where they live, but that's gonna suck. And she's like, well, I can't, you know, so I gotta get to work. I gotta get you back with that. I gotta get to work. And I dropped my keys off and went in the waiting room, and she's out there sitting on the curb with her head in her hand, and like, she's got her card out, and she's like calling to get her balance on her credit card just so she can see if she can afford the Uber. And I was like, where do you live? And she goes, I live at so-and-so and so-and-so. And, you know, it's probably, you know, four miles away. And I actually was a little bit early, and none of the techs were back from lunch. And so I had a 10 or 12 minute window. And so I went in there and I got my key and I drove this lady and her kid to their condo. Oh, and then came back.
That's awesome.
And she was like, oh my God, like, I don't have any cash. And I said, I didn't give it to you, so you give me cash. Right. There was just no reason for you to pay $55 for a 4 mile Uber ride,
right?
Or 5 mile Uber ride, and it's 102. You're both in flip flops, and you there's nobody to walk. She's like, I can't. You just saved my day. I was like, you know what? I don't want to save your day. That's fine. I would have done this regardless because someone needed to give you a ride, and just have a great day. It's like, you know, I was like, don't. I'll take your thank. That's fine. Just go have a great day and do something, you know, like cool for somebody or don't be an asshole today. Or something like that.
You know,
and I felt good and I would have done that regardless, but you know, I was having a good day and this lady and her kid, they needed a ride home. And I was like, you know what? No one's going to offer them a ride home.
Yeah, exactly.
And the shop should have offered them.
A ride home. I agree.
Yeah.
But there was actually no one there. There was just the front desk person because everybody was at lunch.
Yeah.
And I was like, you know what? If you don't mind, you know, my name's Andre. Like, this is my car right here. You don't know me. And it's very weird, especially today. You shouldn't get in a car with somebody. But would you mind if I, you know, would you accept a ride from me? And she didn't care. She was like, oh, my God, that's amazing. Let's go. So, you know, that's I don't know. I didn't want an award. I didn't want a trophy.
Right, right.
I didn't do it for like a tip, because if she had pulled money, I would have said, like, keep that and get your kid a lunch or something.
Right.
And I just think we need to do that. That should be our baseline.
Man, look. Yeah. Before we get out of here, I want to say something about this. We have a friend of the show who's also does a segment on the show every once in a while called Matt Versus the World. And he works for a company that he travels all over the place repairing equipment and doing things like that. So he interacts with all kind of people all the time. And he says, dude, there's so many assholes out in this world. But he also draws cards for Tops. He does he does comic book cards for, like, he does Star Wars. He does Garbage Pail Kids. He does stuff like that. He gave me three proofs from a Star Wars series that he did. And, you know, these things can range. They can go anywhere between, you know, $6 to $300, depending on who or what the character is, you know?
Yeah.
And so I have three proofs, and we're going to do a giveaway. This is the first time I'm going to announce this here is because you brought this up. We're going to do a giveaway of these. Anybody out there that'll he wants to do it where you guys have to film yourself doing something nice for somebody. He said the reason behind it is because there's not enough people out there that do nice things for other people. And whether it's open a door for somebody, you know, give a homeless guy a dollar, whatever. He said, just do it. and then he'll pick the video of his choice, and whatever one he picks will get one of these cards. And, you know, they're really nice, and he just wants to give them away to people, but he wants to make sure that he puts something good in the world by doing that. So he wants you guys to go out there and do something really nice for somebody. And you just send them to us at MHOG podcast, just MHOG booking at Gmail. Send us the videos, and then we'll send them to Matt, and he'll decide who gets these cards.
That's awesome. Yeah, yeah. That's and then maybe that kind of action will stick, and you'll, you know, you won't just do it because you're getting, you know,
exactly,
like you're getting a drawing for a thing, and it'll,
exactly,
it'll make you feel good to be like, yeah, I want to do that some more.
Right, because, you know, not everybody's going to get a card. Not everybody's going to get a card. So, I mean, you know, there's only three, but I hope multiple people do this. And
I hope a ton of people do that as well, and I support that, and that's a rad giveaway. I love giveaways. Like, a lot of people always send me, they're like, hey man, we just did this cool t-shirt, or can I send you one? And I'm like, first of all, I love the offer. I hate getting free stuff. I always trade. Like, if I'm at a convention, like a vendor comes over, I was like, dude, I love your shirt. He's like, you can have one. I was like, you're not giving me a free shirt. He's like, no, I love Monsterville. I was like, that's great. Why don't you come over and I'll sign a picture for you, and then we can trade.
See, that's really nice, man. That's really cool.
Because I won't take free shit at a convention if I can. But everybody's like, no, oh my God, just have it. It would be my. I'm like, no, don't put it. We've got to do something. And people, like, they email me, and especially now, like, they're like, hey, do you we're making this thing, or, you know, we've got this cool shirt. Do you want one? And I'm like, I'll tell you what. Yes, I want one, but I want you to keep it. And then I want you and I to team up for a giveaway of someone that can't afford to buy it.
Very cool.
So it's neat things like that. There's different ways to, you know, go about it. And yeah. I love all the stuff. It was like, but I can only have so many t-shirts.
Of course.
Yeah, but that's a great way to kind of, you know, send something back out to the world. And, you know, I'm looking at a box on my floor right now. It's a good friend of mine. I'm going to give a shout out on our show to my gal April Hooper and her husband Matt Hooper. So I call them my Super Hoopas.
Nice.
And she'll probably listen to this at some point, but she knows I love to read, and she's always tried to get me to read her favorite author. And I've always, like, been like, I will when I get through all these series that I'm in the middle of.
Right.
And she sent me one like a week ago, and I read it, and I was like, oh, I actually dig your guy. I like this. She's like, okay. So she just sent me like a box of like 10 more or something.
Nice.
And I'm like, oh my gosh. So that I'll, you know, she sent me that, and I didn't do anything to deserve 10 books, but I'll certainly appreciate it and read the hell out of them. And then tell people how much I enjoyed it so they can read them and enjoy themselves. So that's a shout out to April. So she did something nice too. So it's, you know, we have a theme today. We have a theme as we close out the show.
Oh yeah, man. I just got the wife came in here. My kid just threw applesauce all over the bed, so I need to go deal with that.
Well, that's the most metal hand of God shit I could ever hear.
Yeah. I was like, what happened? She said, I don't know. I was like, all right, so we're gonna deal with that.
Maybe
madness.
We should just change it to the applesauce podcast.
That's right. We are the applesauce podcast. Thank you guys for joining us. No, Andre, thank you again, man. Look, and we're really appreciative. I'm so glad you're okay. I know you're working through your stuff, and hopefully we can have you back on soon again, man, because it's always fun.
I'm thankful for the invite, and I'm glad we could sit here and yuck it up, and I could blab on about stuff.
Hell yeah.
Yeah.
All right, guys. Well, I was your host, Wayne.
I was your co-host, Applesauce.
And now as your guest, heart attack.
There you go.
And, heart attack guy.
And as always, guys, remember to keep it metal!
Adieu, parting is such sweet sorrow.
Go ahead and run. Run home and cry to mama.
Okay, then. That's it.
Get the fuck